their annual report. We're dealing with the department annual report.
I hope honorable members have got their copies. I'm going to allow the department to take us through. I've been told that the letter from the minister saying I regret to advise that I will not be able to attend the portfolio committee meeting 10th of October due to the IMC on the medium term strategic framework started in the morning. So you are raising your hand, Honorable Power, yes?
Chairperson, I want to just ask a sort of administrative question to the officials presenting regarding the presentation that we're getting today. Am I protected?
Yeah.
Ma'am?
Yes.
So previously when we had meetings with the department on the APP for the upcoming year, we asked that instead of receiving a narrative report of certain areas of performance, that we were given the spreadsheet just like the Department of Water and Sanitation provides to us. It gives us the targets and then the annual performance achievement against targets. And I've spent some time, this report was only sent us yesterday, also despite us asking for at least 3 days' notice, but I've spent a little bit of time looking through it. And I must just say that as a parliamentarian, it's incredibly difficult for us to exercise our oversight function when we're provided with a narrative report, when actually what we need is a statistically based report that shows us the numbers. I have raised this before. I was informed by the acting DG that we would not just be provided with narrative reports again. So I'd like to ask if in the next 24 hours we as parliamentarians can be provided with the spreadsheet of what the targets are and what the performance was on all APP indicators, not just select indicators pulled into the presentation. Thank you.
Honourable Member, we are dealing with this report that has been tabled by Parliament. They've tabled it. We are proceeding with it. And we are going to interact with this report. And we will write our report to Parliament. If you are saying
the compilation.
Yes, of the report showed whatever it will then reflect. This has been tabled. So we are dealing with annual report, but in the subsequent meeting that we are going to have, we'll be dealing with their APP. That's when we'll then be able to say, in your APPs, as you must put this and that. Here we are dealing with the outcome of the report which Auditor General has went through the report and put the financial statement on the report. So,
Chair, I understand perfectly well what we're doing in committee today. All that I'm asking is that we are also provided, because this is an extensive, it's 79 pages, and there's a lot of narrative in this presentation. Whilst we do appreciate that, it is not a criticism of the department's work. What we are asking for is a spreadsheet that just gives us the numbers, so that we're able to interrogate the performance outside of the narrative in this report. So these were all of the targets according to the various four programs for the financial year, and these are the outcomes in terms of the numbers across the provinces. So it's in conjunction to this that helps us conduct our oversight function better. That's all that I'm asking for.
We're together, Honourable Member, but the report, they use the format that is given by Parliament what they should report on. So that's why I'm saying when we plan for six Parliament, Honourable Members, let's remind that process what we want the department to do for us to be able to oversight on them. So now this is what has been tabled to Parliament, which has got the numbers, but the presentation there is the summary of this booklet. So and in the we should actually have this booklet. So when they speak, we look at those things in the booklet. Those targets which the Auditor General has spoken to those issues and the planning and monitoring has assessed the department on. So that's what I'm trying to say. You are right that you need the spreadsheet, but in this meeting, the spreadsheet is here. This booklet is what they've been asked to provide table to Parliament. So we're dealing with this document. So that's what is in your, what is this? This is a summary of this booklet. So let's look at, as they present, maybe they must present very slow so that honorable members can be able to follow as they're looking at their annual or your annual report.
Thanks, Chair. The other thing is we've asked now, and it's a number of members of this committee have asked both the committee secretaries, yourself, and the senior departmental officials to provide us with a number of days notice when they circulate these documents, because we've got a vast portfolio and the information is intricate. We received many of these presentations as late as yesterday. Now, it's not our committee secretary's fault. I saw the dates that those presentations were forwarded on. And we have asked now on a number of occasions that the department provide us as members with adequate time in order to interrogate the report. So I don't know what more we need to do, because we have asked, could we get a response from the department on why we were not provided with at least 3 days' notice to study these reports?
Thank you, honourable members. Your rules say that the department must table the annual report by the 31st of December, of September, sorry, of September. The department that we are engaging, they've tabled their report in line with the deadline that is put by Parliament. The department that has not tabled their report before the 31st of September, their report will not be dealt with, like your water and sanitation. They couldn't meet the deadline as outlined by the law. So these ones they've tabled by September, Parliament by September had these documents. The question is, and we are on recess, is something that we would have to look at how Parliament can be able to make sure that we get this document even when we are on recess. They've tabled on the 31st of September, that's why they are being discussed. And there is a deadline that we should make of the MTEF as budget framework. By the end, the 31st of October, we should have finalized the BRRR for the adjustment of the budget. So this, that's why we are given the whole week as members to look at the reports of department, such that if there is a need for adjustment, we look at the annual report and propose adjustment, and so that we are able to have time even to present them to the Appropriations Committee of Parliament for them to be tabled when they meet with the Minister of Finance. And then the report, after adopted by Parliament, then will then have the response from the Minister of Finance and the Minister of in this case it will be of Human Settlement, because water and sanitation, there will be another arrangement that must be done, because they have not tabled the report in line with the law.
Thank you, Chairperson. So we were only sent these presentations, I'm looking at my inbox, some as late as last night, all of them yesterday and the day before. And if the department then has done their job in terms of tabling the report before Parliament by the 31st of September, then we need to hold our committee officials responsible for not having circulated those documents. I understand what you're saying, but just because as MPs we were on constituency period and we were in our constituencies working, this administrative officials and staff of Parliament are not on constituency period. Now, you say we've come here this week to study and interrogate these reports and to ask the departmental officials questions, but it is not possible to ask the departmental officials questions until such time as we have had a chance to read and interrogate thoroughly these reports. Now, we do not represent our own jackets in this committee. We represent more than 57 million South Africans' interests. And if I'm going to ask the departmental officials the relevant and necessary questions, I as a member need time to study these reports. If these were tabled before Parliament by the 31st of September, they should have been circulated to us by the 1st of October as members of this committee.
You're right, because there is a process of Parliament. If members, they have a complaint around the process of Parliament, because is the Chief Whip's forum, which include all the political parties who determine the agenda of Parliament. And let's take it there in our party's Chief Whips and say the research that we have clashes with the towards the annual report and it disadvantages us to deal with the report. And in future, they should look at how they address the issues of when members are on recess, report tables, how they should come on. Honourable members, I want us to proceed with the meeting. So if we want to discuss things outside the report, we'll then deal with them. Allow department to present. What is that, Honourable Member? I'm still speaking. No, but I'm still speaking. And is that forum that determines the agenda, which members should actually they had, you have, there is a process that you can raise those issues to. Honorable Mashiru and then Honorable...
I was saying, it is not a matter that we can resolve here in a proper manner. Remember, a recess is a recess of Parliament as a whole, because it has been like that. Whether the officials are proactive or not, the fact is that we only came back on Monday here. So, what we, I'm sure, I thought Member Powell.
Yes, sir. How can I help you?
But I thought I'm trying to talk to her directly. I thought that the proposal we want to make is that maybe the presentation shall be made and we shall ask the department to listen to our questions. And then we say as a committee rather than as parties, as a committee to say, don't we want to have a meeting where we will then, for instance, that we go out and look into the questions ourselves, come back and have a last meeting with the department to give the what we are recommending as a committee to the department. But the fact of the matter is that the calendar of Parliament is a standing calendar. You will not change it because we want to do things the other way around. But the committee can recommend to the chairperson that we have an additional meeting prior us going to Parliament. That can be better. But if you want to change the calendar of the meeting, it will not happen because we are just but one committee of the bigger committees of Parliament.
I don't think a recess is a problem, Chairperson. The problem is we're here from Monday, Tuesday, but we only got this thing Some of us, we got them yesterday because we were following up. Where are the documents? If we did not, and the other one on WhatsApp we received, I think it was last night. So we are saying, why are we not given this in time? It was tabled in time on the 31st of September. We came Monday when the parliament was already starting. Why we did not get it on Tuesday? Or either we did not get on that Monday in our kitchen hall. This is what we are saying. I don't think the recess is a problem. Thank you.
I'll allow Qualitha to respond on that one.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members. The annual report were distributed last week through the pigeonholes. The big envelopes were given to support staff, especially those that are in the old assembly chamber. The pigeonholes were overflowing, so we requested staff to come and collect the documents. So it is out of our scope of work to make sure if each member, because we informed the support staff to assist with taking the documents for each member. Thank you.
So the report was distributed last week. That's what they are saying. And they've requested our staff to come and pick up the document because the pigeon, they will not fit in the pigeon hole. That's what they're saying. So
where is the report?
So what I'm saying that the if your staff members have not received those issues, those reports, let's in the next meeting let's deal with it because the issue of state reports or presentation coming late was raising. But this time, I was told that they've done it. Mine report, I've used the WIPS report because I'm told that they've given it to my PA, and my PA has never given me those documents. So I'm waiting for my PA to respond in writing, where did he take in my report. The same thing should happen if you have not received it. Let's do it in writing because this is a formal process. So that we're able to resolve the matter of documents arriving late to others in the meeting.
Thank you, Chair, for that explanation, and thank you, Khalifa. Can I just ask, we all travel, we all have iPads, we all have laptops. I was in the Eastern Cape and rural KZN all of last week, so I didn't check my pigeonhole the whole week, because we've requested previously that all documents, and to this point, all documents have always been sent to me electronically. The documents that get put into my pigeonhole go into the recycling bin, because I don't work with paper. So can I just ask, Khalifa, in future, just to avoid the misunderstanding, because we need to work together as a team and foster mutual cooperation, as difficult as that may be at times, if you do drop a document that's just a hard copy into our pigeonhole, can you pop a message on to our group WhatsApp and just say, hi members, we don't have an electronic version. Please note there are urgent documents in your in your pigeonhole. Because then I can message my PA and all of the members here can then message their PAs to go and get those documents. And then we know we will not be looking out for them electronically. Thank you.
Yes, so the other important message that we should put forth is that the report, because it must be signed by the accounting officer and the minister, will not be tabled electronically. They must submit them by hand to the speaker and before we can say they've submitted. And the Auditor General statement is there, confirmed by Auditor General that the report has reached us. So that is a process that we must do. Yes?
No, last one. And the other thing, if there is a recess, let's just try by all means maybe to courier the documents. If there's a recess, and then we know that the following week after the recess, we're going to have a committee where we'll be tabling the annual report, why we don't just maybe courier the documents to the constituency?
Thank you very much. officials, sorry, the officials will the officials will put the request to the management of parliament, and then the parliament will respond whether they cannot do it or not. Not us here, Honorable Mishu. Thank you very much. Thank you, Honorable Lushabane, and Honorable Minister in absentia, and Lushabane. You are welcome. You can talk to your report.
Chairperson, thank you, and greetings to all the members. Chairperson, we are here as a departmental team. The team is here. You are familiar with the members. Emmanuel is here, our COO. Our CFO is here. Mr. Nyameko Mbengo, seated next to the CFO, is the acting DDG for corporate services. We also have Meswazi Taitai, who is the parliamentary liaison officer in the ministry, and my office is also represented here. Chairperson, we also have in attendance the team from the NHFC, led by the CEO. They came in their multiplicity. Chairperson, we also have some members from the SHRA who came early to familiarize themselves with the proceedings here. With that said, Chair, we have prepared the annual report of the department, which was tabled and availed to Parliament. This is an extensive and detailed document. What we did was then to prepare a set of slides to assist or walk through this document in a way to summarize the contents of this annual report. Chairperson, the slides are 80 in number. That should not in any way disturb the members, save to say that it's really a navigation tool through the report. Chairperson, if you permit me, as you have, we present this annual report in the context of increasing demand for housing and services. Urbanization in the Republic is a fast-growing phenomenon. I know in the previous appearance before the committee, we have tried to elaborate on that. But Chairperson, the presentation has really five parts, the purpose really being to brief the committee on the outcomes of our performance for the year. Secondly, Chair, to be able to confirm the journey that we've traveled in the past 5 years, the MTSF, talk to the expenditure and the grants, how they performed. And lastly, Chairperson will outline some of the areas that, in our view, require attention for improved performance, as well as then the next steps going forward. Briefly, Chair, I go straight to slide number 4, which is the beginning of the performance report. And Chair, members would be aware that the department has 4 programs. I will speak to those programs and the performance outcomes in each part. Chairperson, the program on governance and administration you would appreciate, Chair, that we report that we have complied with 75% of statutory requirements. The following other examples include all the statutory tablings of strategic plans, annual performance plans, and even this report, although it's in this financial year. The financial statements to Treasury as are required, including Chairperson, the collecting or assembling even those reports from province and municipalities. Chair, we confirm that when it comes to payment of invoices, although it is small, that only 0.7% of invoices were not paid within 30 days, and those invoices, Chair, are 34 in our total number, but it may sound negligible, but we are aiming for payment of invoices within 30 days. These are those invoices that would have had issues back and forth with the suppliers and so forth. Chair, we also confirm that the DPSA, as in public service requirements in respect of human resources management, have been met. Further to that, Chair, the legislative program, we are happy that while the bill at the end of the financial year was adopted by Parliament, eventually the President signed it into law a few days ago, the Home Loan and Mortgage Disclosure Amendment Bill is still work in progress. Chairperson, the Housing Consumer Protection Bill, while at the end of the financial year it was still in development, it's now, I can confirm, published, Cabinet approved that we publish it. We are currently busy with public awareness around that and so forth. I'm sure when we are done, we'll be able to come back to this House for Minister to introduce that bill. Chairperson, further to that, the consolidation of the human settlements legislation is also work in progress. That's what remains to be completed in this financial year and beyond. But as at the end of the financial year, that remained work in progress. The work on the Human Settlements Development Bill, again, is work in progress, because this bill, Chair, you would appreciate, is the foundation, the enabling legislation for the creation of the bank. Later on, you will receive the presentation from the NHFC, which in part will talk to the journey towards the bank. Chair, the PIE Amendment Bill, it remains work in progress with the Department Rural Development and Land Reform. Similarly, the amendment to the regulations to the Rental Housing Amendment Bill Act, that's what we are busy with. We're just confirming, Chair, so that as at the end of the financial year, these were the legislative, work on legislation that was underway. Further to that, Chair, the program on intergovernmental relations and international relations covered a wide range of areas. I have moved to slide number 9. In this regard, Chairperson, and I won't bore you with the details, safe to say that our work with the structures of the African Union continued. Further to that, Chairperson, the international cooperation arrangements that we work with, we continue with that. Chair, I want to perhaps hasten to confirm that we work with the Cities Alliance. That's a partnership that's been going on for some time, and it really seeks to assist municipalities in responding to questions of urbanization, as well as responding to informal settlement proliferation in particular. In that regard, that work continues. We are seeking to expand the footprint in the various cities in the Republic, except that the knowledge gains in that regard are what we are pursuing. Similarly, the work on the new national, new urban agenda is consolidated. The work on the India-Brazil and South Africa partnership, although it falls into the BRICS work, but that arrangement continues even within the auspices of DERCO. Chairperson, I move further to confirm the intergovernmental fora that we are servicing as a department and getting involved in, because as you would all appreciate, the work of the Human Settlement Development hangs around intergovernmental relations, but also multiple concurrency in this regard. So there's a wide range of these fora. I don't want to bore the committee with the details thereof, save that we are well represented and active in these fora. They range from not only our MINMEC, but also our planning, budgeting, and implementation fora that we convene quarterly with provinces, municipalities, as well as other sector departments. Chair, the FOSAD work continues and it feeds into cabinet. Back to basics forum, again, that seeks to respond to local government strengthening support, of course, work of parliamentary committees as we are required to support the ministry, that continues. Chair, perhaps of interest to the committee would be this work of this committee, the Joint Coordinating Committee that coordinates the release of state land. It feeds into the Interministerial Committee on Land Reform, but safe to say that administratively we work with the affected departments and the Housing Development Agency to not only identify the land but prioritize and the terms of such release going forward. There are other fora, Chair, the transport fora, the task team on the pomfret that we are involved with. Chairperson, this does not account for the one-on-one engagement that we'd have with provinces, the metros in particular, around performance. But the foras exist, but there's ongoing work in between. Having said that, Chair, I move to slide 15. Here, Chair, what we're trying to confirm is that from our delivery, support, and monitoring objectives, we are having to analyze the readiness of projects that provinces seek to implement every year. As at the end of the financial year, when we were stress testing those projects, we isolated the risks as they would relate to sites that were planned by provinces, units that were planned that would have been at risk. We are talking here about the technical risks of not being ready for implementation. And therefore, when we isolate these, we have to work with those provinces to ensure that those risks are mitigated so that projects don't get stranded. Further to that, Chair, we have previously reported that we are championing the implementation of catalytic projects 15 number. They are distributed along the provinces, or in all the provinces as listed. Of all the 50 catalytic projects, 24 are at planning stage, and some are having to negotiate litigation matters. 26 of these are at implementation stage. Chairperson, insofar as our response to distressed mining communities, our program sought to confirm the alignment between provinces and municipalities concerned, but also, Chair, to agree the priorities for investment. The municipalities with distressed mining communities, Chair, we've listed them in this regard, but they straddle the provinces of Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Free State, Gauteng, and the Northern Cape. This is not to say that there is no mining activity elsewhere. These are the areas where the distress is greater. Chairperson, further to that, in the mining towns, we also assess informal settlements and work with the municipalities to upgrade those. When we look at informal settlements, Chairperson, and that's a huge concern given the rising in urbanization, We're categorizing informal settlements. In the past, we clarified to the committee some informal settlements, you can upgrade them in situ because the soil conditions are okay. There's no risk factors that can put people's lives in danger. Some you have to then relocate simply because they are in risky areas, whether the floodplains under the pylons and so forth, or dolomitic grounds and so forth. So we indicate in the report, Chair, those informal settlements. Chairperson, it's perhaps important as I move to slide 20 to confirm that, Chair, as part of assisting provinces and municipalities to upgrade informal settlements, we do assess informal settlements to establish their status, because you would appreciate that the status of informal settlements changes frequently. So we have to establish and appreciate the feasibility for upgrading and assist municipalities to respond as such. And therefore, Chair, we list those informal settlements per municipality that we attended to assess their feasibility. Further to that, we also prepared upgrading plans for 319 informal settlements in all these municipalities. Chairperson, this support is very important. It's critical because it avoids the delay in responding to the informal settlements that are already there. Further to that, Chairperson, as I move to slide 22, and perhaps this slide, Chair, will be read with down the line the grant expenditure, but safe to say, Chair, that in the year that we've just closed, the system has delivered through the subsidy program in total 46,730 service sites. In addition to that, the program has completed 77,346 housing units in total, creating 224 new opportunities for families to be accommodated. With that, Chair, and you can see the distribution across the different provinces, we further report, Chair, that we've built 1,014 residential, community residential units. This really are, in some cases, the conversion of hostels into modern family-type units. Some are newly built. That number we certainly can do better in that regard because the demand is great. Chair, we confirm the delivery of housing opportunities availed to military veterans, 230 in number. That number, again, Chair, it can be robust, and we'll come back to that as we move forward. Chairperson, the support to provinces and the metros in terms of implementation of the people's housing process, which we are repositioning to become then the learning program, continued. We also, Chair, confirm that over and above assessing informal settlements and preparing development plans, we support the provinces to implement actual upgrading. That includes technical support, peer reviews, peer exchange of knowledge and know-how, but also, Chair, just matters of coordination in this regard. We also, Chair, we did confirm, avail the project process guide, because implementation across the board is our real focus, so officials are constantly trained on project implementation methods around subsidy housing projects. Chairperson, as I move to slide 26, the consolidation of development finance institutions, that's the three entities, NHFC, NURTURE, as well as Rural Housing Loan Fund, that has progressed. The consolidation is now a matter that is firmly completed. We are now having a single entity, the NHFC, and they'll report a little later. This is a big step towards the establishment of the Human Settlement Development Bank, we'll proceed with the bill once we finalize the business case in this regard. Chairperson, I want to confirm, Chair, the last bullet on the slide, that insofar as the title deeds are concerned, we continue to offer support to provinces and municipalities. I'll come back to the grant later, but safe to say, Chair, that we are gradually chiseling away this backlog of title deeds. The reality is that there are a lot of townships that remain unformalized. And therefore, the bigger effort is now going into formalizing those townships. If you look at the numbers, and this is quite a detailed slide, as to the movement that we are making over the years in terms of issuing or registering title deeds against the backlog that is there. While this is a busy table, it provides the full view of the title deed numbers that we are dealing with. Chairperson, let me confirm, insofar as that grant that deals with title deeds, one, we started with a total grant just over 515 million rand. We transferred that amount to provinces who spend just over, my eyes are doing a miracle on me. My apologies, Chair. Safe to say that provinces spent 342 million of that amount. Most requested a rollover of that amount that they did not spend. And again, that is to give effect to this question of addressing the backlog of title deeds. To improve the performance on title deeds, we confirmed, Chair, as we did before, that while we introduce the grant, we have to pursue the registration of, rather the formalization of townships, so that there is registrable properties to transfer. We do not downplay the issues, Chair, that have to be dealt with insofar as disputes over your homes, missing beneficiaries, and so forth. The real issue is you must formalize the township so that you have opportunity to register the township. Chair, as I move, we also want to confirm, Chair, that we have sought to extend this grant because it was a grant with a limited lifespan. But Chair, MINMEC also took a view that we need to quickly move to a point where as we hand over the property, the registration becomes the immediate intervention going forward. But also that as the NHBRC inspects the properties for quality purposes, at that point, we must make sure that the title registration process is initiated to avoid the backlog recurring. These are some of the interventions, Chairperson, that are in place to support the implementation of this program. Chairperson, when it comes to capacity development in the sector, it is a wide-ranging process here, over and above those that are programmatic as implementation of informal settlements and so forth. In this regard, Chair, we do train practitioners. I list the numbers there, 104 practitioners trained insofar as this land and property information systems are concerned. Training of practitioners, Chairperson, in respect of Batupili, to train, to ensure that within human settlement development, these principles are embedded. There's further training, Chairperson, that is undertaken across the board. And Chairperson, this includes practitioners in different spheres of government. I want to confirm, Chairperson, that this training, you will see, Chairperson, distribution across the provinces. These are the numbers in total, 639 practitioners trained. Scholarship program, Chair, we've awarded 75 scholarships to deserving learners who are enrolled to be in university and in various disciplines as listed here. We also chair confirm the gender distribution of the scholarship awards. Chair, I must confirm, Chairperson, that these are the continuation of the scholarships awarded. I want to get Chairperson to the next area on slide 35 relating to the FLISP, the awarding or rather approval of subsidies to those beneficiaries. FLISP, Chairperson, is that subsidy that is aimed at households in the gap housing market that earn above the full subsidy threshold. Therefore, the subsidy is really to help them meet the deposit requirements of a home loan. Only 1,673 subsidies were approved, and you can see the distribution per province. Chairperson, you will appreciate this was in the past financial year, that is before the central agency, as in the NHFC, got involved in the direct administration of the subsidy. Chairperson, I pursue to confirm on slide 36 that while we've conducted assessments on the lending patterns that our financial institutions have, we do so, Chair, so that we have ability to make policy interventions where required. But also this assessment, this monitoring, helps us to engage differently with the lenders where we isolate trends that are not perhaps in keeping with our developmental outlook. Insofar as the Urban Settlements Development Grant and the Human Settlements Development Grant itself, members would appreciate that we have set aside as a policy 30% of this grant must be, or contracts and projects must be awarded to women, youth and people with disabilities. We record, Chair, that when you look at all the provinces and the metros, provinces only managed to allocate 19% of the HSDG to these designated groups. And only 15% of the USDG in the metros went to this designated group. It's an area of concern to the department. I'm sure when we come back to talk to the third quarter and fourth quarter reports, we will be indicating the specific interventions we are making here. Chairperson, we confirm that overall the department achieved 83% of its targets. 13% of the targets remained work in progress, while 4% of the targets remain unachieved. Chair, I want to give a quick summary on the five-year performance just for context, because we are at the end of the term, that's the fifth administration, but the slides I'll focus on is slides 40 and 41, because that's really the summary of the medium-term strategic framework performance. Chairperson, you will see that insofar as assisting households to have access to affordable housing, we've achieved 78% of that instead of the balance that is outstanding, the 137,000. Similarly, Chair, 88% or rather 89% of informal settlements that we targeted, we were able to reach. We missed that target by 79,000. The assessment of informal settlement, that's work that's ongoing, but we only achieved 2,044 of those, as well as then 1,208 of upgrading plans that we are to prepare. The target that is well achieved is related to the subsidy units that are availed And you can see, Chairperson, we have achieved pretty much just under 2%, no, over 98% of that target, 2% shy of the target that was set. Social housing hasn't performed that well. We only achieved 51% of the target set. The community residential units, 70% of the target. Similarly, a private affordable rental unit developed 89% of the target. The delivery of lease remained under stress because performance in the 5 years is about 13% in that regard. In this light, Chair, we continue those macro targets. Title deeds continue to struggle. We've only achieved 37% of the target. Similarly, 22% of targets for the new housing development. Chair, land, we are good on that. We have achieved and exceeded the targets of land assembly. Getting the land is not a problem in this regard. The real issue here, Chairperson, is the zoning of that land so that you are then ready to develop on it. Lastly, the loans offered or issued by DFIs and the private sector in this regard, 59%, that's the target over the medium term. Chairperson, I'm going to skip the following slide because that's a matter of detail elaborating on these programs individually. I will pass these slides to get to what I want to write, the performance on the grants expenditure. That is slide 53. I confirm, Chairperson, that in this past financial year, what is otherwise vote 38, the total allocation was just under 32.5 billion rands, distributed between the programs as indicated here. Chairperson, the expenditure overall is 99.2%. You will see that program one spent 91% of its budget, 92% was spent by program two, program three, 75% of its budget. Program four, which contained the grant, spent 99% of its available money. Chair, the reality is that we have underspent by 260 million rands, and I'll come back to that. It's important, Chair, when you look at the economic classification of our expenditure, that the same 32.4 billion rands translates, Chairperson, the larger part that was underspent relates to 31 million rands of compensation of employees. Of course, when we have not filled the vacant positions, we can't pay the salaries. That money remains unspent. Further to that, goods and services, 59 million rands. I'm just giving the highlights there. The transfers and subsidies, 161 million rands was unspent. And therefore, Chairperson, we account for the 260 million rands that remained unspent. Chair, if you look at the distribution per branch, you can see now that's when we exclude, Chairperson, the grants that go to provinces and metros in this regard. All in all, Chairperson, the variance of expenditure for the corporate office of the department amounts to 99 million rands out of an operational budget of 790 million. Chairperson, again, when we look at the transfers as at the end of the financial year, for all intents and purposes, all the transfers were made, and we list, Chairperson, when you look at the top part, the grants, all the grants were transferred, save for the emergency housing grants that those amounts, sorry, Chairperson, the amounts that we list in there, 55 million rand that would have been part of the provincial emergency housing grant, and the other, which is the municipal emergency housing grant. Chairperson, insofar as the entities, all the entities, Chairperson, received what was due to the department, the transfers were all made. And lastly, the departmental transfers, all the transfers, Chairperson, were made, save, Chairperson, to a few entities that the transfer to the University of Technology, Mangosuthu, that remains unresolved because the agreement, therefore, needed to be renewed, but we couldn't transfer before the agreement is in place. But that's a matter that was administrative that we are dealing with. Chairperson, insofar as the transfers, that is the picture as at the end of the financial year. The committee may be interested in individual grants, Chairperson, and that's slide 59 starts to talk to those grants. The Human Settlements Development Grant, that's the primary grant. Members, those figures there, the transfers to the provinces, we've transferred all the grants to the respective provinces. The 18.16 billion rand that was available. Now, Chair, we also confirmed to the House that of all of this, there is 296 million rand that remain unspent by provinces as at the end of the financial year. That accounts to just under 2% of that. And you can see the distribution. Those provinces, if you look at Eastern Cape, 37,000 rand, that's 37,000 rand, 8.6 million rand in the Free State, 161 million rand in Gauteng, 50 billion in KZN. All those provinces have had to then pursue applications to secure the rollover of those funds given the projects that were tied to those grants. Similarly, Chair, we give you details about the Urban Settlements Development Grant that goes to metros. Insofar as that 11.3 billion rand, Chairperson, we confirm we transferred what was due to each of the metros, notwithstanding the rollovers that they would have secured. We confirm, Chairperson, as at the end of the financial year, the municipalities concerned had spent just under 50%, actually 43% of the grant. We accept that metros had a quarter further to spend this grant, but we're reporting the performance as at the end of March. Chairperson, you will see we also provide you with non-financial data that supports these grants, what were the outputs, and it's quite elaborate. I don't want to bore the committee with those details. We avail them to show the diverse outputs of these grants, Chairperson, especially the USDG, ranging from spatial development and the built environment, interventions that they make, roads and stormwater, transport, access to water, access to sewer services, solid waste management, electricity, other socio-economic amenities that metros deliver through this grant, as well as matters of local development, or rather economic development and job creation. Chairperson, all of these outputs are what metros then produce collectively. Lastly, Chairperson, last but not least, emergency housing grant, Chairperson, we confirm this grant, Chairperson, is available so that in the time when incidents of disaster occur and damage houses, provinces in this case and the other one for municipalities can apply to access the grant to assist those households quite quickly. We confirm, Chair, the provincial emergency housing grant, the 260 million that was available, only 204 million was approved to provinces, and we list those provinces, Chairperson. The expenditure of this grant in the provinces is somewhat varied. You would find that provinces don't move quite quickly in responding to the disaster. They move quickly to apply for the funds, but when they have to execute, then there's delays in that regard. When you look at the number of temporary shelter that we were supporting, that amounts to 3,177 in that regard, and the delivery thereof remains of concern. Chair, we list the dynamics in each of the provinces. Then we come back to the Municipal Emergency Housing Grant on slide 69. In this regard, Chairperson, the 140 million that was available, it was distributed to these municipalities that applied. Safe to say that while we transferred 37 million in this regard, only 3 million was spent. And Chair, again, this confirms the concern that the department sits with. We introduced the grant as a quick response, but once the money is dispatched to the municipality or province, then they are slow in executing the interventions. Chairperson, I want to proceed to confirm, I don't want to deal with each one of the municipalities. I think the narrative report is self-explanatory. Chair, I want to confirm, Chairperson, that perhaps a point I must make in respect of emergency housing. While we do all that we can to support provinces and municipalities during the incident of disaster and they access the grant, we are now reviewing the implementation arrangements. It doesn't help to avail the money and the money doesn't serve its purpose and there's a delay. The public outcry in this regard is such that we have to reconfigure how the emergency housing solutions are delivered and the speed thereof. We are looking at the possibility, Chairperson, because the law allows the Housing Development Agency by law is empowered to assist in these instances. So if you have an agency that can be ready at points of disaster, then it can deploy the solutions. But we are writing that up, Chairperson, as a mitigation measure. Chairperson, overall, as I conclude, the challenges that confront our delivery program, and I'm not talking, Chairperson, the environmental challenges, I'm talking the systemic challenges that are within administrative range. When provinces or municipalities are requesting funding, we are confronted with either incomplete or incorrect submissions. That delays. Further to that, the frameworks are there, the policies are there, but the provinces, municipalities find themselves misinterpreting what is required. And misinterpretation leads to misapplication. Of course, Chairperson, we meet with instances where in the event of a disaster and houses are damaged or burnt, some communities resist the temporary shelters that are provided or even the relocation that is required. Those dynamics between the municipality and the community is what we are having to look at. And also, Chairperson, the verification of beneficiaries that are stand to benefit from programs is also at issue. Delays of procurement processes, ironically, Chairperson, at a point where provinces advertise for contracts to be awarded, you then find a serious challenge where they can't even do briefings because they are overwhelmed with the number of people that come to briefings in some instances. So that is an issue that requires attention in the provinces in particular and some municipalities. Chairperson, I do not want to repeat, because there's a repeat here, it's an error, we're repeating what we stated there. Safe to say, Chairperson, that unlawful occupation of units, it's a massive, massive challenge to the housing program. Not only emergency units, but overall. And that requires that locally law enforcement agencies are on their toes to support the program. But also, Chairperson, communities need to be empowered to be able to be the owners of the developments as we roll them out. Chairperson, as I conclude, we have taken the view, Chair, that we will be working with the provinces and metros to overcome these deficiencies and the challenges. We are workshopping provinces, municipalities, together with Treasury around what these DORA and the grant frameworks and the policies are about so that there is no misinterpretation. Chairperson, as I indicated, our bilateral engagements with the provinces and municipalities becomes our norm. We can't sit in Pretoria. We are having to be on the ground, engage with the provinces, visit projects to overcome these deficiencies as well. Chairperson, there's been calls for flexibility and efficient response. That's what we are seized with going forward. The audit outcomes, Chairperson, the report of the Auditor General is part of our annual report. We just thought we would highlight some of the audit outcomes. Chairperson, insofar as financial matters are concerned, the department received an unqualified audit opinion. There was no emphasis on any audit matter in this regard. Supply chain management, Chairperson, there are no material audit findings in this regard. Human resource management, again, there is no material audit findings in this regard. The issue, Chairperson, arose insofar as the performance information that we submitted for audit purposes and the quality thereof is what is in question. We were found wanting, Chairperson, insofar as the performance information that we submitted, the auditors could not find it useful, especially as it related to specific indicators. And Chairperson, we have taken time to sit with the auditors to appreciate those deficiencies and correct going forward. Largely, it has to do with the way some of the targets are phrased. If we are to provide support to a province, what constitutes that support? How does that get measured? How reliable is the information that we submit useful to the audit purpose? Chairperson, insofar as Program 4 is concerned, again, there was no qualification in that regard. I indicated, Chair, that the real concern out of audit relates to the quality of the performance information we submitted. We are having to step up our game insofar as information technology is concerned. And again, there are serious interventions that are made in this regard. Chair, I said I am concluding. We worked with the auditors to refine the concerns that are raised. Audit action plan is already in place. Chairperson, we are already effecting those corrections in this current year annual performance plan. There's a bigger issue that is a sector governance issue where the APP of the department containing the commitments you would find that the province's APPs are not aligned. Similarly, the estimates of national expenditure, there was also a misalignment when you look at the provinces and what is in the APP. We are taking steps to correct that, to align those. I talked about the quality of performance information that is submitted insofar as the customized indicators are concerned for the sector, for the department. We again took steps in that regard. Chairperson, we've taken a view that we also would have to report on the audited performance information of the provinces so that the audit reports of provinces add up to what is the reported performance in our annual report. There are issues of timing and alignment. We'll work on those things ourselves. As I said, Chairperson, the audit action plan is already in place, and that's what we are implementing as we move forward. Chairperson, this constitutes the annual report of the National Department, including, Chairperson, the audit outcomes as submitted by the Auditor General. Chairperson, I thank you. We are here, the team is here and available to clarify any matter that the committee may wish us to clarify. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, SNDG. Honorable members, that is the report, summary report of the Department of Human Settlement. I'm inviting members to interact with the report. Honorable Mokoto, Honorable Mashego, Honorable Mashala, Honorable Seki, let's start with Honorable Mashego.
Thanks, Chair. You will realize that the report is a bit lengthy. We might take a bit of time to talk to it. Chair, just as a matter of fact, Department, please note that earlier on we had the Auditor General and the Monitoring and Evaluation team talking to the report you are talking about. So we might be... will be asking questions in comparison of the two, even if you did not say certain things. We'll ask them because it was said only in your absence about this report. So I just want to preempt that there must be no time when your response must be to say that I did not talk of that, where does the question come from, because there were people who raised the issues about this issue before you came. Okay, my first question I want to ask you, because even upon reading the document, it is clear that builders and beneficiaries of buildings are very, very scared of registering themselves with the NHBRC as a request, as an expectation by yourself, to a level that then the non-registration of the buildings as built become an adverse report on yourself finally. What is it that you believe that, or what is the importance of then the NHRBC to still continue when in actual fact they themselves are not ready to, the builders or the beneficiaries of the buildings that have been built do not see themselves as willing to want to register with the NHPRC. What's the problem?
Let's go.
No, who is the kid laughing me? Okay. That's the first question. Also, in the earlier discussions, we were told that you fraudulently gave scholarships to students or to beneficiaries. And you are reporting as an achievement of that scholarship giving. And in it, we were just analyzing with the figures and numbers you've given. Out of all the numbers you gave, Rishavan, only 16 women benefited from that process in the very bigger scheme of things. But it does not, that might be even a compounding question of gender. But the fact of the matter is that the Auditor General believes you have acted fraudulently in giving those particular scholarships to people. Was it not the Auditor General? It is both planning and monitoring, yeah. That's the first point. Now, what really is the issue there? Because it is a report that it will go to the public and we need to talk to it. Because though I do have an issue of anything wrong done is called fraud. To me, wrong is wrong, fraud is fraud, it's different thing. But the writing says fraud, the acting DG. Talk to it. Misallocation of houses, and I've asked the question, what does that mean, the misallocation of houses? Is it wrong allocating houses to wrong people, or non-allocation whatsoever, and you are claiming a victory on that allocation, but it is the findings of the monitoring and evaluation or the other general. No, I think it is the evaluation. Believes there is a misallocation there of therefore bringing about illegal occupants of houses because the allocation was not the correct allocation. Now, the BRR process seeks to want to allow you through you in your own, if you identify a need to shift funds from one department to the other or vice versa, to apply to Treasury through Appropriations Committee. Now, if that is the case, for instance, how did you not want to do that when you dealt with the fees must fall amount that you spend, which can be seen as I'm not sure that it's a misusage of money or I don't know what is it, but whatever the name. But to me, there is a process to legalize that which you did. For instance, even it's a pity or not, it is not about water, but I can give an example of water on leaks where people are saying this was an expenditure fruitless because it was not budgeted. Why there is a process of going through this PRR in order for you to legalize the funding that was not necessarily part and parcel of the earlier budget, according to the specs. What is the difficulty of you doing that? And this is what the chairman has raised in building up to the ATPs being passed. You have transferred 700 something million rand. Only 3 million of that is used. And you remember we raised the issue with yourselves building up to the APP's passing. You are not following your money where you give. You give money, you close eyes with a belief that the money will be used according to the specs. And only to be surprised by the Auditor General when you audit whether the money was used, or yourself when you do this report in the annual reporting. What is the difficulty of you following your money? And I know that there is a saying, I overheard you saying that of late you want to start to say, if you apply for money, before we give you money, show us the plan. And if there is such a thinking, Why is there still monies that are misappropriated or misused when the plans have been checked by yourselves and it is seen whether it is correct, the correct plan, and so, but there is still a misusage of the money there, or the unusage of the money there. I don't want to go back to, because if I give an example, the chairperson holds me liable to my statement, so she's very sharp in doing that, so I will run away from it. We were told that there is a process that is going to start of the registration of debt on the wrong spending of money. Why do you think that this process that you are now showing here is not showing us to that level, where we must also agree with that that should happen to yourself? But I think, Chair, what I want to ask the department to do now is to stop to be very insolvent on things that you do. For instance, if you are going to, for instance, somebody told us on one meeting that there are people who have built houses on the flood line of water, which has got something speed that it can blow the whole house. And when they want to move people out of that, residents are refusing to move. And you're also saying the same thing. But once you become extravagant and to the public meetings that you report to, that we want to do this work, we can't do it because this line of people are refusing to. Surely the communities might help you to succeed in doing that, rather than you struggling with it alone, insolvently, with the hope that the other day God might help you to be heard by communities, when there are people that can still help you, as voted by those people, as their representatives, as councillors, MPs and MPLs. And I want to also, in a recommendation form, that, and we have, I'm sure we have spoken about it, I know somewhere in our own meetings as the party, don't want to publicize beneficiaries of houses at the place where you're going to develop for people to take one. And it has happened. I was a councillor in the old Brakpan Town Council in 1995 to 2000. We used to do that. That people, somebody will be told that we are going to build a house in 113 Zondo Street. This house, this stand is the stand of Puta Seki. And Seki will guard that stand to the ladder. When they put a stand, you start saying, my house is being built. When it ends, nobody will occupy the house because the house is known as Seki's house. Now, we build houses, Chair, and leave the houses for 2 years unoccupied, dormant. And there are millions of people who need houses. Why do we expect people shall not occupy these houses? And then we even made laws that when somebody occupies the house and it is 48 hours gone by, when you move him out, find him an alternative place. And with all those issues, we still are not careful and proactive enough to say, I'm going to build houses at this township. This township, here are beneficiaries. If they want to put a one-room house next to the stand where they are to guard that when it's finished, then you know he's guarding his own. Don't you want to do that, Chair? What is difficult in allowing such a thing to happen? And I think that, finally, Chair, just as a view, the grants are your money that you give to provinces, to agencies, and to metros. When your money is not achieving what is aimed at, what is wrong in you doing it yourself and handing over the product to the owners, meaning the city or the... Why are we not doing that? Part of the of your adverse report is not on the basis of what you did not do. is on the basis of what is it that those that you gave people to do job for on behalf of yourself did not do, and therefore the address come to you or come to us as national parliament. When in actual fact, it is responsibilities you gave either to the municipalities, to the cities, or to the provinces. But because you just give and look around and with the hope that the municipalities will do or the province will do as you wish to do, and if they don't, if the only thing you can do is to come and report to the to parliament, I don't think that is correct. We need to be proactive. We need to report the, what we did in order to correct and what is the outcome of what in our intervention in the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My question is based on page, it's a page which talks about expenditure by economy classification. I'm referring to this point of compensation of employees, because according to the budget, there was money that was budgeted for filling in vacant posts, and then not all that money was utilized. And then because of that, we are having a qualified report in one of the entities, for example, in CISOs. One of the contributing factors that led to CISOs having a qualified report is because they did not fill in key positions or executive positions that were supposed to have been filled. And because of that, or because of the delay of the money, which some of it you withheld and did not distribute to companies such as CISOs could not fill in those vacancies. So my question is, what are you going to do now to rectify that situation? Because when you look at the audited report, we are still seeing that some of these key positions, some of them, they are not yet advertised. And then, you know, even in some of those positions that have been advertised, there are no interviews that has already taken place. So what is the time frame that you're going to put in place so that all this money be utilized for this purpose of filling in those vacant key positions, so that in future we shouldn't have a qualified report from entities like CISOs? And then what I've heard from your report is that you are satisfied about the delivery of houses that you have been able to build for the people of South Africa. Can you really be satisfied about delivery of those houses which are of poor quality? Because according to the Auditor General's report, we did not get value for our money, or the people did not get value for their tax money, because according to the auditor's report, it is said that the houses that were built by the contractors are of poor quality and you are doing oversight. So from the beginning, when you were doing oversight, when you realized that these houses were of poor quality, what did you do? Did you just look at those houses and the building contractors and did not recommend that maybe they should make sure that they up their game by building quality houses for the people. And then if at all you did recommend to the provinces or the metros, you know, they should make sure that the contractors that they are hiring to do the job should build a good quality houses. If you realize that they were not doing or following your recommendation, why didn't you implement consequence management? Because it simply meant that that was fruitless expenditure. And then again, according to the auditor's report, it is stated that one of the factors that led to CISOS and what is this entity called EAAB, for example, one of the factors that led to them receiving adverse qualified report is because project management was not adequate, resulting in additional costs being incurred, contributing to poor quality of significant delays. When you look at the statement, you can already detect that there is irregular expenditure here that took place, and then there is also fruitless expenditure that took place, yet you were making oversight, and then I take it for granted that you did not make this oversight maybe yesterday or day before yesterday when you were supposed to give us or write this report that you are giving to us today. You have seen that a long time ago, but what did you do? Were there any implementation of consequent management with regards to that? And then again, according to one of the key findings of the auditor report is that there was significant delays in delivery against project schedules with an average delay of 24 months. What did you do about that? Were you not aware of this? Were you not doing oversight? For example, we do have the monitoring and evaluation department. Didn't they see this in advance and maybe, you know, reported these irregularities or anomalies to you? And then if they did, what did you do about it? And then we also have another key finding here, which is stated by the auditor, the auditor's report, which says lack of participation of all relevant sector departments and stakeholders to support the achievement of government priorities. The very same question comes to you. Were you not aware of this? If you were aware, what did you do about it? Or perhaps maybe you made a particular provinces and metros aware of this. Did you make a follow-up? It is one thing to go and do oversight, realize that there are mistakes done, and give recommendations or try to develop the particular department or entity. But after you have done that, do you go back and do follow-up? Do you give them a time frame when to correct, you know, their irregularity so that the next time you come back to them, you find that they've corrected their mistakes? And then if you come back after you have, in case you do make follow-up, after making that follow-up, after you realize that nothing has been done, because if something was done after the recommendations, after the follow-ups that we have done, after, you know, the monitoring and evaluation that was done, if something, you know, if nothing happened, then you should have done something. I suppose you didn't do anything, because these entities that I'm speaking of, CISOS and EAAB, couldn't have, you know, received these qualified reports. And when you look at these qualified reports, they're just not, you know, qualified reports. People here or officials who were in charge of these projects that were supposed to have been, you know, done, they squandered taxpayers' money. I'll give you an example from the auditor's report. It states that irregular expenditure in the amount of 41 billion, you'll correct me. I'm not sure here if it's billion or million, but 41 million plus, you know, was spent irregularly. And then, if this amount of money was spent irregularly, what have you done about it? Are there going to be any consequences? Because so far, since I've been, I would say I've been mandated to become one of the portfolio committee members of Human Settlement, Water and Sanitation. There is no way where I've heard that there was some outcomes of any fruitless expenditure or irregular expenditure that has been done in the past 5 years. And a lot of money has been wasted in the Department of Education. But there is no recourse. There is no punishment, you know, given to the officials that are doing these irregularities. Is it a norm that every time people will misuse public money and we are there as servants of the public to do the right thing, but we are not doing it? Is it going to continue even in this term where this committee of us, you know, is serving? Are we still going to experience this? And really, if at all we are going to experience this that we are seeing here from the auditor's report, then we must know that we are failing the society of South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Maputo, Honorable Masala.
No, thank you much, Chair. My learned colleague, I think, has already covered the rest. I'm just going to touch on a few items. The issue of tender system is killing our country big time. So my question is, the country sector, the construction sector is riddled with a lot of issues related to tenders and corruption. Has the department or agencies, any of these transgressions, and is the department engaging with other departments such as Public Works, Water and Sanitation to engage on the challenges in the construction industry which impact on your sector? Number two is, how effective is your internal audit committee in providing early warning risks associated with spending? Number three, the last one, in your assessment, does your staff complement have the necessary capabilities to undertake their work? And could you please provide a quick overview of performance bonuses for the year under review? Thank you.
Honorable Sefwai. Thank you, Chair. I think we need to appreciate the presentation and also the which followed after the monitoring and evaluation and the Auditor General. I think it's the sequence
helping us in terms of understanding the development process. Please help me if I missed the presentation. I didn't hear anything about the rectification. If I missed that, please redirect me to a page where it appears. In the understanding, Chairperson, of the role of the department to support provinces and municipalities, I think very clear the national is handicapped by some pieces of legislation that controls the role. Yeah, that controls the role of other spheres for it to do its job. But the dilemma is that when the Auditor General audited one performance of the National Trust, I think the issue raised by Honorable Chief Whip of the committee, it becomes relevant, because it then...
Point of order, Chairperson, do we have a Chief Whip in this committee? That's what clarity purpose. Thank you.
We'll answer it. Remember.
It helps. It then helps the department to understand that while it is not its role, there are times where the department has got to assess its performance. A reason is that we understand that the role of support. But when the Auditor General comes, it really evaluates the department holistically. We hear the issue of the 30-day payment invoices. I think we need to appreciate what we see. But this matter is what also a problem with other spheres of government and the expectations about national government. Which is true, that national government should have a better way to deal with these particular issues. Maybe then national government would need to move a better stride, because at another time, we've got to learn lessons from national government. How is it doing it? I'm impressed with this, but it is not enough, because other spheres are far away and national department is the big boss. In terms of the competences of spheres of government. I hear is it acting DG, Ghana? Acting DG is presenting a technical risk where they have to end up in dealing with the issues that are municipal and provincial. It's important that at another time the national department should present itself how this should be regulated in terms of the legal framework. I raise the issue because you have got money which you want to transfer to a municipality or particular project. You are unable to do it because the processes of land use planning, rezoning, survey are not happening, and that should be perceived as a non-performance of the national department. I think there is a way that the department needs to look on these pieces of legislation that are barring the department to intervene in such. I hear that there are areas of mining that are more distressed than the others. I fear where communities would ask us why we're not dealing with the mining project in KZN, whereas we deal with Limpopo, and we are unable to answer. if perhaps the department needs to empower us, what do we mean by the worst distressed mining areas than the other? She appeared in constituencies, she was and we are unable to answer. It's important that we are well empowered. I in page 23, the presenter, the acting DG, mentioned an issue of community residential units. I would imagine that those are hostels. If I'm not, please assist me. I don't see Ndokwenza in PE in the Eastern Cape. Where is it in this whole process? It's an area that is contentious within that particular community. It's an old hostel of Port Elizabeth. I see a program of military veterans, a very critical program of this country. I wonder, when you say Gauteng, the units are 92, are you building for the real soldiers, or are you building for the families? Are you building for a son, no daughter, no families? It's important that we get that clarity in the process, because there is some controversy in this whole area. And are you working with the Department for Military Veterans so that the department is not accused of doing things that it does not have a competence on? Bear with me, my questions are up at the page of the presentation. The scholarship program. This is a very interesting program. I think we need to know more about this particular program. Who qualifies, who doesn't qualify, and how do you get the data so that you meet your targets? Because if I see these targets, perhaps could not be realistic on the basis of what we know, what is happening within our communities. So it's important that when we do things, we must do them in a manner that is going to give credibility to the department, so that we are not questioned by communities, by whoever. How does this happen? How do you get the data for the scholarship? The program of addressing the social class, which is women, youth, disability, in terms of allocation of housing, is a very strong transition agenda of the country. I want to make a proposal, Chair, that if this program is not working well, because I see how it's been the under expenditure, the National Department should take this program. It should be implemented by National Department, because it is a program from national and provincial and municipalities are unable to do it. And the national is going to be asked, why you do not listen to the transition agenda of the country? So it is my proposal that a very clear intervention strategy, that the National Department takes the program and implements it from at a national level based on the reasons. Coming to the end, Chair. I'm not doing a second presentation. I'm being intimidated here, Chair. I'm happy to see the issue of the emergency housing, which is not taken as an emergency by municipalities and provinces. Perhaps the presentation says there is a mechanism that the department will try to put in place to intervene. This is an emergency, and as it is now, it's not an emergency.
where money is sent and it's not implemented. Perhaps you would like to hear acting DG on perhaps on your strategy of turning the whole process around. In my understanding, there are many municipalities in the Eastern Cape that had to deal with the issue of the emergency, but I see only 3 and 4 that I mentioned here. Chairperson, perhaps the executive will tell us what is happening with other. Some of them, I know them from Alwar North and some of them from Dabangulu. They do not appear in the process. The delayed procurement process, I think it's a matter that is challenging the department, not necessarily the national department alone. The national department, I always raise the issue because it became very clear on the Auditor General in terms of the supply chain in different municipalities and provinces, that the department should establish a strategy on how best to deal with the issue, because we are nearer even the Treasury Department. How do we deal with the particular issue? There were times where municipalities would just call people and give them a work to do, which was illegal. In some of instances, there was part and parcel of that because of this delay. So it's important that you try to assess that particular process. It's a very controversial issue and it's a heated debate, the issue of procurement for housing. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. Rectification, I didn't hear anything about it. Thank you. Honorable.
I hope I'm not going to destroy, because the member's strike took some of my questions.
My apologies.
But Chair, you and our whip there always indicate, Member Mkhotu, that irregular does not qualify to be fruitless. So I think we should be careful on that interpretation, because your emphasis was like money is wasted and all that. But it's not automatic.
Point of order, Chair.
I shouldn't have mentioned your name. I should have just addressed the meeting as is. But
let's.
When I spoke of irregularities, I didn't imply what you are saying.
But you are responding. You are not calling him to order. Honorable Zeki,
you have corrected me in the first
place. That's it, yeah. Now,
and waited for the department to respond.
Honorable Zeki, talk to the meeting and not talk to the other people.
You must stop correcting me.
No. Honorable, wait. Honorable Mkhotu, please can you respect my meeting? Honorable Wena, can you respect the meeting? So I'm only chair. No, but wait, Honorable Mashiru. No, it's not your problem. Allow him to be angry. Let's proceed, Honorable Zeki.
Thank you, Chair. I withdraw that, Chair. Thank you for the advice. The only thing I can say for the attention of the meeting is that irregular does not mean fruitless. So we just have to be careful of that. Chair, You know, it's quite interesting on how you close but, this presentation, because you said you are closing it with the notes of what the auditor has reflected. To us, it's actually saying you are going to act on what the auditor has said, which we appreciate. I assume that you are also closing by acknowledging what the monitoring and evaluation have said, so that you could act on it. You just did not mention it. But I know that you mentioned it. The other thing, Chair, that we should appreciate, when the Auditor General's office was presented to us, they actually said this was almost a clean audit, but it was wasted by the entities in the main. And also there was a financial unqualified financial statement has increased from 50 last year to 60 this year, an improvement with all those other important areas that was raised by the Auditor General. Chair, let me also, the department is saying that they are also considering the audit findings or auditors or auditing report of the provinces as well. Can I just check whether the provinces has done the audit? And probably if that's the case, if you have the outcomes, you can report to the meeting what are different provinces, what have they received in their audit, if you do have. But I think it's an important statement that you are making, and we appreciate that. It shows an oversight that you are putting to the provinces. On challenges, Chair, as I said already, the previous reports of the morning are actually addressing those challenges, which in the future meetings, Chair, or our quarterly meeting with the departments, we are going to be able to hear how different are you from yesterday. You know, I've learned one thing in politics, Chair, which it's a mantra to some of us. You make today to be better than yesterday, so that tomorrow should be better than today. That's a very important mantra. So we are not expecting regression. We are expecting progress. The issue, I think Dr. Mashuk has raised something important here about people who are occupying the houses illegally, which was also identified by monitoring and evaluation. But to be honest here, the department, there's no reasonable reason why this thing happens. I've never had a reasonable reason, except just the failures of controls. The failure of what you know what you need to do. So I think we need to take those areas of control that you need to do. One of the areas that you are not doing correct is what has been said by Member Mashuko, that do you build houses without knowing that who's going to stay in this house? Because as houses are built, there's a queue, Chair. It's normal, there's a queue. Yeah, is it a queue or line? How you call it? You've got a backlog of more than, I think it's close to, between 600,000 and 800,000, I think, for backlog. So you do have people that need, or that have registered. Chair, on the ULDG, I want to agree with Member Sloy. Okay, just before I go to USDG, Gauteng wants to propose an area of biometrics on their allocation of houses. That when you sign a happy letter, we have your finger. I don't know whether you've considered to look at that as national. On the USDG, Chair, maybe this one is for us. Where we could invite maybe two man metros to this committee, whereby these two metros can get one from here or Eastern Cape, any other province, and say to them, on quarter three, you spend 44%. You are left with one quarter, and your balance is 56. That's fiscal dumping. And what, again, that normally happens, the department, when it's a province that spends like that, department say, department, we're in a province that you're not spending, give us our money, we are going to give it to the provinces that are spending. Why can't we do it the same on the USDG? A metro that is not spending, we take the money, we give it to those metros that are spending. On catalytic chair, I think this is for another meeting again, where the department is going to give us this 50, 24 is for implementation, and 26 is for implementation, 24 is still in the planning. So that if that 26 can be planned correctly, Chair, we are not going to have what the trend of monitoring and evaluation, because we'll be knowing who owns this site, who's going to stay in this house. The planning would have been done correctly. So I think as a committee, we need to check exactly that implementation. What do you mean by it? At another time, of course, the details. You can sample about 10 catalytic projects in terms of their metric readiness so that we know exactly that implementation, it's not a pipe dream. And then there's one interesting thing, Chair, on the international and intergovernmental relations. Can we hear the value of this? Are we discussing what we have seen recently in our country, where there were Afrophobia kind of incidents and criminal incidents? What is the value? Because I've seen where you are talking about JCC or joint committees, it merely talks about, it's more local than international. Then the bills, Chair, again, this one is our own. I think, Chair, after sorting out the issue of the researcher in our committee, because these bills must be summarized. Beautiful bills, if you look at their titles, very beautiful. And as a committee, we are able to abreast ourselves on the content of them through our research as a committee. So I think this is one is for us. You can still go for Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Seki. Because we are dealing with the annual report, and department, you are here confirming that issues that were raised by Auditor General are issues that need to be attended to. Because when we engage the Auditor General, Chief, we are saying that they give you feedback in 3 months. And obviously, you knew of the other issues that the Auditor General has raised.
we expected you to say something. What is it that you're going to do with those issues that the Auditor General has raised? But because you have not done that, we should then say, we would want the action plan as submitted to Auditor General be shared with the committee and get feedbacks as we continue with the engagement with yourself. The other issue which we were placing the department the first time we were meeting with you was that you have put 30% aside from your budget for the women contractors. And your report silenced that how many, because it will be very important for us to note that indeed you have achieved your aspiration, particularly because you are not the implementing agent. You've got entities, you've got provinces and metros that are implementing on your behalf. I want to reiterate the issue that is raised by Honorable Mashiwo, that you initiated the program. Therefore, and established entities to help you to implement some of the things for the programs, and even go into contract with provinces and municipalities that they will implement your program. Therefore, the burden will continue to be on you as long as those people are not performing. Would never clap hands for you to get unqualified when your entities are performing the way they are performing. You have to play your monitoring role on your entities, which is something that you should look at. How often do you get to monitor your entities in terms of their performance? And the issues of provinces. One of the things the Auditor General is raising says the business plan from the provinces is not translated into the APP, and which is a problem that we have to deal and handle it. Anything so that it becomes legal and can then be able to put provinces, if they are in their APPs, they will then be able to be accountable because Auditor General audits them in the provinces. I think it should be attended to. We want to welcome the signing of the Property Practitioners Act by the President. We would appreciate if at some point you can come and share with us the regulations, because most of the act becomes passed progressively, but the regulation becomes a problem. So we would appreciate if, because it's the competency of the Minister to do that, but we would want to see whether there is no impediment to the implementation of the Act itself. Yeah, those are my issues that I would not go into the issues. One, appreciate that your report is even saying this is what we will be doing, but as we are going to engage, most of the issues we will engage with with you as we are going to plan for the sixth parliament strategic plan and maybe join those that congratulating you for the good work. You have done the good work for unqualified. There are still departments that are struggling to get unqualified. And you have reduced your matters of emphasis to the level of acceptance. So, but your entities are painting this report. And you should actually do something about it. It's a problem that acting DG every quarter has a report on the performance of department would want to know what have you done with CISO's challenges, including the filling of the post and all those things. It should be wait for the annual, because one of the things that it's my perception, DG, that because entities, we call them when they present APPs and when they give annual report, because of the program of parliament, it's tied. They take advantage. That's why there is this performance. You are doing your best because you are coming here on 3 months basis, but we would want you to, before you come to parliament, you should have actually interacted with your entity and report on the progress of what the AG has raised around these issues of the financial matters that the AG has raised with them. In the legacy report, you're supposed to have established provincial CISO's provincial officers. Officer. So we would want to get those feedback, because that is one of important entity that should help us to achieve transformation and participation of our beneficiaries. I think I want to agree with Honorable Mashio on we should become more transparent. Let's not be insolvent because it end up working against you. If your system can be able to produce the list of beneficiaries even before the contractor, when he go and build, he must know that he's going to build for these people. And therefore, those people now, but they will have interest on the building of their houses. You will not have the misallocation, you will not have this shadow workers raised by AG, because the participant of beneficiary would help to mitigate some of those issues. If they go there to go and see their houses, they will be able to see when the contractor is mixing 20 grievous of cement of sand with one bag of cement. They'll be able to say no. I think this house is going to be very weak. So I think we should actually move to that level, particularly because there is that challenge that has been identified. I'm going to allow you, DG, and your team to respond to the issue, and we concur with the Auditor General, and we make sure that all the issues that have been raised need to be implemented as soon as possible.
Chair, before they respond, can you just a point of clarity on that issue of the Chief Whip, so that we understand if we have a Chief
Whip? the study group, not the committee. Yeah,
thanks. Not like so much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the honourable members for the questions. Chair, I have registered some 53 questions. I confirm, Chairperson, that the team, it's not only ready, but it's available to process all of these. Chair, there are questions that our CFO will respond to, the Mengongo on the some of the entities. Mr. Mbengo. I stand guided, Chairperson.
But you know what I'm saying? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Chair, I will respond to some of the questions and the colleagues will add. Where something is missing, I will just conclude. Chairperson, perhaps it's important to state up front that we work with the Department Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation on an ongoing basis. Therefore, we don't have issues with their report, with the report that they presented to the committee and the trends that they have highlighted. In here, there's constant feedback, even as we report to Cabinet, basically to MINMEC and Cabinet, it's the dual reports that we present our performance, they comment on it in the same way that they did with the annual performance outcomes. Further to that, Chairperson, we are actually happy with the report of the AG. I say happy in that it reinforces that which we've been preoccupied by and seeking to turn in the sector as a whole, both in respect of our entities, but also the provinces and the metros. We have since agreed, Chairperson, how as we move forward, we strengthen not only our operations, because that's a given, but I'm sure the office of the AG would have shared with you how the sector audit needs to be aligned so that what the auditors are looking at here nationally, they are looking at the same thing in the province. And that is why the issue of the business plan, which is a grant funding instrument, the fact that it's not in the APP of the provinces is a problem. We would want it in the APP. There have been issues. However, the audit that the AG has done highlights those issues as the governance gaps that we must attend to. So we are very happy with the report, Chair. Further to that, Chairperson, the actions that we now have to implement over time to correct the deficiencies, we are very happy when we come back on two fronts, because some of the deficiencies are what we must deal with now. So the amended APP plus how we then address those deficiencies, we are more than happy to share that with the committee. Chair, I want to start also by confirming that our business finds itself in an intergovernmental domain with multiple concurrencies. The powers and functions of provinces, metros, are to us a given, and therefore we are having to work within that construct. It's a constitutional construct. We accepted it there. It's presenting serious challenges. I always make the point that as accounting officer in the National Department, I am not there in a provincial department where an MEC makes a decision. I will only learn of that decision post facto. Similarly, when an HOD makes a decision to deprioritize projects, I will only know that post facto. Even worse, when beneficiaries are allocated units, I will only know that post facto, because the power to approve a beneficiary lies with an MEC, as does then the allocation. So I thought that context is very important to sketch for the benefit of the committee. But with that in mind, it does not take away the fact that we must find the best way to navigate this intergovernmental landscape with its concurrency. So we have to do that. We have no choice. Chair, let me come back to the specific questions and quickly reflect on those. The NHBRC exists as the quality management agency of government on the one hand. On the other, it provides the warranty for the houses that are built, so that if there's any structural defects, that can then be corrected appropriately. Now, we sit with a simple challenge, which we've dealt with the NHBRC. Every house that is built must be enrolled, it must be inspected in phases up until it's finished. Now, when that doesn't happen, you then end up with a scenario, one, on the one level, poor quality construction. On the other, houses constructed but not enrolled, and therefore don't enjoy cover of warranty. The policy is clear. So in correcting those gaps, we've had to specifically now sign with the NHBRC. When we approve the business plans of a province, NHBRC has two roles. One, can they confirm before we approve that all these projects are enrolled? Secondly, if they are not enrolled, we do not want, late enrollment. You want to then ensure that they then work on the basis of this approval to enroll in that specific financial year. The DPME report, Chairperson, the way we read it, they analyzed our report and said the department has detected these fraudulent things, these reported irregularities, and investigated. Now, out of that investigation, what DPME is then saying is that there are these trends, allegations of misallocations, allegations. So all of those things that DPME is saying, we have investigated them. It's not things that we don't know. We have investigated where there are criminal we've reported there are cases opened around those concerns. Similarly, the allegations of misallocation of houses, that is rife, and we are looking into those cases from two fronts: what the policy allows, but also what is the practice. I can safely confirm, Chairperson, that there is trends of, or rather disputes of allocation of houses, and the bona fides of beneficiaries are questioned locally. And therefore, by the time those issues come to us, the transaction in the local space is done. And therefore, we then have to then go back, investigate where there are corrective measures that has to be implemented. Chair, I also want to confirm that we did not shift funds to fees must fall. There was a general cut of all budgets by Treasury. Therefore, it was a Treasury-led process. We were, all of us, victims. I'm saying victims for lack of a better word. We were all affected. In that regard, it was a government-wide reprioritization. Cabinet approved. There's a process in Parliament that was done. Now, Chair, I want to assure the House that we have a rigorous monitoring process in place. We hardly wait for problems to manifest. That is why our planning is rigorous. The funding transfers are rigorous. The requirements to transfer are rigorous. The unfortunate part, Chairperson, is that the choices of spending that one rand lies with either the province or the municipality, as the case may be. The committee will have the benefit of interacting with some of these provinces or municipalities. A case in point, Chairperson, simple case. There were floods in Etegwini at the beginning of the year. We did everything that we could to assist the municipalities up to a point of approving and transferring some 90 million rands to assist those victims, those houses were damaged. Right? The municipality has struggled. It's only last week when I was there that they confirmed, no, they've started now. It's too late. It's late in the day because the houses were damaged during Easter. We are here now. It's only now that that process is unfolding. So it is an issue that we are having to pay attention to quite explicitly and specifically, even remodeling how the deployment of emergency houses will follow. We'll come back to the committee in respect of the remodeling because we have to deal with MINMEC, agree with the MINMEC, and then be able to deploy. Chair, the way I understand it is that the amendments to the auditing regime is such that when there is material irregularity, the auditor, the AG, I'm talking now material irregularity, we call it MI, is such that the accounting officer is instructed to act on same, failing which, if you don't act, therefore I am personally liable if I don't deal with that irregularity within the specified time frame. And therefore, that liability then translates to, then attachment of my children and my properties, whatever it is, assets I may have. that's why I didn't go there, Chair. I want to clarify these questions around relocation. Relocation is not an easy issue. It's never been. I doubt it will be. Because people's livelihoods are attached to the spaces they live in. And therefore, while some will appreciate the reasons for being relocated, others may not. That tete-a-tete in that local space is a very sensitive but involved process. We are alive to the fullness of community facilitation. We've never gone in and said we must. No, it's a really developmental process grounded in local structures. Now, when there's resistance, of course, it delays the solution that you provide to that community. Chair, MINMEC has already ruled on the need to publish beneficiaries. when an MEC approves beneficiaries for a project, they must publish that. It's a decision of MINMEC. Now, I'm the first one to say to this committee, while the decision is current, it was in August when MINMEC took that decision, we now have to see to its implementation. I am certain that we will see, not in as we go along, how that gets implemented, Chairperson. Chair, I would very much like to take direct responsibility and go build these houses or the roads or infrastructure required. But I operate within the regime of powers and functions that are distributed between the spheres. Our hands are not tied. We just have instruments that are time-bound. If I am to intervene, if the national government is to intervene in a province, it's Section 139. Oh, sorry, Section 100. Now, that mode is wrong. By the time you activate that, that's a year later. Kanji, the option that we've taken, unless extreme circumstances dictate such, the option that we've taken is much easier. We get quicker turnaround and results if we are there with the province, the HOD, the municipality, project by project, facilitating, negotiating, disagreeing where we disagree. That facilitation is what we would rather invest time, because it delivers the solutions closer. Yes, we don't win all the time, because if in the province the decision is to go south when we are seeking to go north, it requires a different resolution there. Chairperson, I also want to confirm that perhaps the distinction must be made in that where we've underspent and have not filled positions, there's a process underway. Members would appreciate we come from an era where the outer year of the compensation budget was uncertain because the fiscus was not performing well. So we could not responsibly fill vacancies when we are not sure in year three how are we going to pay salaries. So we took a view at first to say we'll fill these vacancies on a short-term contract, 3 years. It didn't work. We advertised, it didn't work. Because generally people want security of employment and so forth. So we then went back to Treasury, agreed there's now certainty. Now, members would have seen we've advertised, I think, over 60 posts. We'll fill those. But it will not change the past because we didn't spend that money. But, Chair, I want to assure this committee that in the National Department, yes, we have vacancies, but we do not have critical, what do you call it? All the critical vacancies are filled. Those that matter are filled. And let me answer the question that was asked later about the skills, capabilities, competencies of staff. We have a competent team, Chairperson. We have a team that gets the job done. I'm not saying we are a perfect team, but we have a team that gets the job done within the rules, the regulations, and the statutes. I'm fairly comfortable with this team that we have and the team that we left in Pretoria. Now, the second part to the question was, perhaps that translated to CISOs. CISOs has all it requires, and I'm sure we'll process their report, but the non-filling of vacancies in CISOs is unfortunate, but there are circumstances to that. The CEO of CISOs, that post is vacant. The CFO post is vacant, and there are several others. Now, those two are very important, and therefore, I concur that it would naturally lead to these performance gaps in the entity, especially CISOs, as the case was. The acting appointments are in place. The functioning, we're supporting CISOs to turn around the corner. Chair, I agree with the, as I said, the AG findings. Those houses that are built, the shoddy work, we've engaged with those HODs. We've done what we need to do, including, in some cases, to direct the province to remove the beneficiary out of the house and demolish the house, because those houses are not safe, and restart. But as you do so, you need to go after the contractor that built this poor house, or this house in a poor way, and recover the cost of those sort of issues. Chair, it is, I don't want to reduce this phenomenon and trivialize it. Even if it was just one house, it's one house too many. It should not be a factory fault in this built environment. So, Chairperson, that's a matter that we are seized with. That's why we are strengthening the enrollment, the inspections, so that you inspect the house at foundation, you can see there's a problem, and so on. Chair, I want to come back, including the questions of delays, Chairperson, and the delays on projects in the built environment, half the time is unavoidable. Weather, it plays a big factor, but the ones that, the delays that concern us are the ones that are human issues that are administrative. Those delays, that's why quarterly we look at the project list. Projects are not moving. Why? What is the issue? Let's intervene. If it can be overcome, we then have to overcome it. If it can't be overcome, you then have to reprioritize projects and so forth. Chair, I left the CFO to look at the irregular expenditure. I wasn't certain the 41 million, I think it related to EAB, but CFO will attend to that. Intergovernmental failure is common in most of our projects, where either the municipality doesn't play ball, therefore the service connections are delayed, and you end up with one part of project moving and being finalized while the other is lagging behind. The reality is that you cannot overstep the authority of a municipality to take over services and run them. In some cases, the projects suffer from that. Some projects suffer on the basis that there is no agreement between the province and the municipality over the timing of the service, the quality of the service, or even the specifications of over those services. But these are matters that we have to intervene on a consistent, ongoing basis across the board. Chair, we've reviewed the tender system. We've completed the first phase. We are commissioning the design of the procurement regime, especially for subsidy houses. We thought we have cracked this issue because the price is given. So everybody who competes must compete on the basis of capacity, not price. Because the minister determines the quantum of the subsidy and the specifications of the house is given. But we have found that there is room to improve this procurement regime. Whether you procure contractors over a period of time, you set aside for some specified groups and so forth, but we are having to reconstruct that going forward. We are consulting with the Treasury and others. Chair, our internal audit is effective. If there is effective, the audit committee is satisfied. In fact, these issues that the AG has now raised with us, they are on our risk register. So our risk management that the audit committees are monitoring and holding us accountable to addresses itself to these risks, to reduce this risk, because it is a risk in any case on overtime. The colleagues will deal with the budget, with the bonuses and so forth. Chair, I want to then confirm that the project readiness matrix is a very important tool for us. In fact, it is already regulated, because PFMA requires that before I could transfer, especially this kind of grants, which are capital grants, to province or means, I must be certain that the receiving party is able to spend it according to the purpose defined. So we are fairly satisfied with the rigor of pre-assessment before we transfer funds. Chairperson, I also want to confirm that the distressed mining municipalities with distressed mining communities
are a determination by President. When the program
was introduced, it was a special presidential package that was responding to specific issues in these areas. As I said, not all municipalities that have a mining operation could be part of it. It was a determination at that level. Chair, I want to attend to the military events. I think we are at a point where we do need to close this matter on many fronts. The military veterans cannot be a growing number. One. Two, this department chairperson builds the houses. This system builds the houses. The specifications are there. The difficulty, and I'm sure the committee has interacted with this matter that we're now trying to close, is to say surely we should know who the beneficiaries are. Because on our part, chairperson, we are incompetent to determine who's a military vet and who's not. We rely on the authority, which is the Military Veterans Department. Now, that disconnect there, chairperson, we are working closing those gaps, because, chair, I always make the point, and you can see the numbers. If we can produce over 140,000 new places every year, surely within that you can accommodate military vets. But the issue is not production of the stock. The issue is the bona fides of those who have to be allocated these houses. Chair, this matter is high and remains high on the minister's agenda, and we are pursuing it. I am not satisfied at the level of performance, but it sometimes matters that are beyond us. Chair, I want to move to confirm, chairperson, that perhaps what we are dealing with, chairperson, is not a function of allocation of houses per se. In my view, in the communities that I've been able to interact with and the provinces I've visited, chair, let's face it, there is increasing lawlessness and elements of criminality. When people forcefully enter a construction site, threaten a contractor, and forcefully occupy the houses, it goes to another level, because it's a law enforcement question. There are criminality elements involved and so forth. So that's the one dimension. I'm saying I plead with the committee to not lose sight of that. Buildings get hijacked, land get invaded, occupied unlawfully, but also projects get unlawfully occupied. Perhaps, chairperson, where we must pay attention to, and I accept the guidance of the committee in reinforcing the MINMET decision. As you approve this project, who are the beneficiaries? At what point do you allocate the site before you started building? so that the beneficiary is part of that process. Chairperson, that we'll pay attention to. We take that guidance, but Chair, we accept that there's a risk in this area. I am sitting with, we can produce the numbers, but there's a fair number of people who on our subsidy system are approved to receive a house. The house that they were supposed to receive is occupied by somebody else. We have to tackle that head on. But Chair, you will accept that in a province, some cases in a municipality, those decisions need to be looked at with that in mind, that they are happening there. All that we want to be able to do, Chairperson, and the Minister has been quite strong on this, is that we approve the beneficiaries, we must be able to publish who's approved and for what house, and when is that house coming on stream. That will shift things. Chairperson, I haven't seen the Gauteng biometric system. We were not persuaded that that's something, because the biometric systems regime is so broad. It's broad. Fingerprint, eyeball, heat wave on your hand. So those systems are many and wide, and therefore the way I understood Gauteng, they wanted to improve the credibility of this person who comes and say, I am Joseph Lishabani, and I can produce an ID, notwithstanding that it may be fraudulent. Therefore, the biometric system was supplementing that. The only trouble was that Gauteng wanted you to build that system using the capital grant and not the appropriate funding resources that are there. So, in itself, it's a good thing, but it must be done correctly going forward. Chair, let me deal with the international relations. There may not necessarily be the value derived on many fronts. It's not necessarily monetary. We are part of the global community. We are party to certain global commitments and treaties and so forth. That's one part. The issues that would then arise out of the unfortunate phenomenon of xenophobia, Afrophobia, and otherwise, there is a process that deals with that. We are party to that. But we are not the lead. We are a party to those processes, Chairperson. Now, Chair, I want to concur with the sentiment that is rising in the committee that we do need to strengthen our monitoring and oversight and regulatory role in respect of the provinces, metros, and entities, because for all intents and purposes, they are our delivery agents. The contracting arrangements around that, Chairperson, it's something that we are looking at, something that we are reviewing, especially insofar as tightening the conditions around the grant. It's going to be very painful, Chairperson. Let me be upfront and prepare the committee, because we will quickly get to a point where we say Province A, notwithstanding the appropriated grant value, because you have not complied, we are not transferring not a cent day one. Of course, the outcry is going to be huge. But if there's no compliance, we should be able to be allowed that space. Secondly, where we have transferred and there is lackadaisical, yeah, that's the word I'm looking for, yes. I don't know what it means, Chairperson. But where there is administrative weaknesses in project management, compliance administration, and so forth, we are having to shine a very sharp spotlight. So much so that because the grant is not appropriated to the Department of Human Settlements in a province, is appropriated to the province, we go to the premier, so that the premier is alerted earlier that there are problems here. Similarly, the USDG, we should be able to go to the mayor and alert them so that they begin to take charge of the consequences that will follow these matters. Chairperson, I have to accept, Chairperson, that the 30% set aside is not performing where we want to. I think it's an opportunity that is being missed for reasons that are incoherent. And therefore, in the next two quarters, Chairperson, we are seeking to provide greater directives to provinces and the metros about how to realize this. Left on their own, Chairperson, we can see the trend. It hasn't delivered what we wanted in the right amount. And therefore, that's where we are going, Chairperson. Let me invite the CFO, Menlongo. I skipped a few, but yeah. And then if there's anything, I'll review the list here. CFO?
Thank you, Acting DG. Honorable Chair, I think we left with few questions to respond to, and I would just want to take the one related to the AG in particular. And even though there were not many questions, there were more comments, especially related to the sector report that was presented by the AG. And I also want to indicate that the comments as given, and Chair, we also noted your comment towards us having a 99 or 98% of the clean audit, but it's hampered by the entities that are developing for us. Chair, I think the resolution that we took, I think in 2 years' time, and of which it's implemented starting from last year, is as we receive, and we don't have the sector report yet from the provinces, because the annual reports have been printed in the period of August. So everybody is still working on their reports. So more often than not, just after those are tabled at Parliament, we get copies of the reports and then we work on the reports ourselves. And we look at issues that particularly would affect the sector in general in terms of the performance information that would have been found wanting by the AG, and those matters that are related to the disclosure of irregularities, with fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And what normally happens, Chair, is the fact that we would request their action plans towards those issues that have been raised by their provincial AGs, because they do have an impact on our national report itself. So we do have a way and a mannerism in which we could, or we would, or we do towards the reports that we receive from provinces and metros have been brought into the picture from this year onwards. So we will consider that, but I also want to link this to how effective is an internal audit towards the usage of public funds as well as the reports that the provinces have and that may not be giving us those unqualified audit opinions with no matter of emphasis. In the strategy of the internal audit, which is a national, it was even the first year ended the 31st of March where we had agreed with our internal audit that they would also be visiting provinces outside the monitoring and evaluation team visiting provinces. So they may be having a little capacity, but they've dispensed themselves in three teams to undertake the clustered provinces. You'll have your Northern Cape being clustered in one, and the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape as one. Similarly with Northwest and Limpopo. So those are clustered particularly for them to be able to accommodate them in one room and share the opinions or share the issues or the proper controls that they would advocate to them, for them not to have these repeated fundings towards the AG's report. So we found that being effective, and with the internal audit coming into the picture, it adds on to the value of what we want to achieve out of the provinces and the metros being inclusive, especially in this financial year. And that on its own takes us back to our internal controls that we have, and we do not accept those internal controls as stagnant. For each and every year that we have in producing the action plan of the AG, we also review those controls if they are still effective or if they do respond towards the changes that we see or towards the challenges that the AG would pose in the report, because they come up with different methods of auditing. So we check the controls that we have and as to whether they are effective or respond to the changes that may occur or that occur. So we would review them in each and every year of the 6 months or towards the 9 months of the audit plan that we have. And actually, I think we shall share the AG action plan with the committee, and as Chair has proposed, we will definitely report on it as we move on, whether it's 3 months or 6 months, but the AG action plan has been approved, we do have it in our midst, and we'll share it with the committee itself. In terms of the 30-day payment, and I think Mama is proposing that we have different and better ways of dealing with the payments, because they do impact on the economy, they do affect the small businesses. But we also want to indicate that while we are moving towards the zero, we come from a point where, especially in the previous financial year, we had 286 invoices that could not be paid in 30 days with different versions of challenges. Some of them were in dispute. Some of them were involving people not understanding as to the impact the invoices that is not paid to the other party and to the 30 days or the PFMA itself. So we have gone past resolving those issues of the dispute, and we're moving towards improving the system as well as to track the invoices against the orders that are in the system, so that we know exactly if the invoice is not forthcoming, then we make a follow-up and go to a point of even phoning the supplier to say, provide us with the invoice, because we need to set it off against the order that is in the system. So we are putting controls almost every day, because we realize that the ones that are existing may not be working towards the challenges that we are facing in generic. I want to respond to the irregular expenditures, fruitless and wasteful expenditures, and even in our instances whereby we disclose them in the AG report. And disclosing them indicates the transparency that we put forward. But that doesn't mean at the same time that we are disregarding the sections in the PFMA. What often happens is even the entities which would form part of the transition that we've started with provinces and the metros and now the entities, is that for whatever that the AG has found to be an irregular act or whatever the AG has found to be a matter of emphasis in their records, we would consider valuing the annual reports of the entities themselves. But we started with NSDRC already, because they had a big irregular expenditures, and at some point, Chair, they were called to perform and provide the committee with reasons as to why this irregular expenditure is not lowering down. And with the fact that there is an irregular expenditure disclosed, particularly in those entities, the EAB, what often happens for us, we can even set out the consequence management. It has to be investigated against the act or the particular people who may have caused the irregular expenditure. Similarly with the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, then the consequence management will come to the fore. But it will be like uncalled for lack of a better word, to can find a manner of saying we provide consequence management without determining the facts lying behind the fruitless and wasteful. It is an offense, and it's an offense that even the accounting officer cannot let it go without it being punished for those ways. And because I agree with the member to say it becomes like a wasted money because you don't have a value for money, but we'll have to investigate first before we can take actions against the individual. So, Chair, I think the feeling of vacancies that the Chair has touched on it, and I think the last one that I want to take is the issue of the USDG. The member has cited that when it comes to HSDG, we are very quick to take money and reallocate it to provinces, but when it comes to USDG, we are sluggish. Chair, I want to indicate that in 2 years, succeeding each other, we've been taking money from province, from metros, that's the USDG, and reallocating it to the other metros. And I think there were 2 metros that have been benefiting in 2 years. It was Nelson Mandela and Buffalo City that we took. And last year, Treasury itself realized, because they also do an oversight towards this, they realized that there would not be any way that this money would be spent by the end of the financial year. So they invoked the sections of the division themselves. And then we assisted the process by assessing and analyzing and advising them as to how this money could and to where the money could be redirected. And unfortunately, again, it was Buffalo City and Nelson Mandela that have benefited from the action that the Treasury has invoked those sections. We took money away from Bloemfontein, and DJ has been advocating it to say 49 million was lost, but they could not even spend the amount, the one that could not be taken away. So in essence, we applied both to USDG and the HSDG. And similarly, in all those instances, like the US, the title deed, if there are no means that the money could be spent or be spent by the provinces, we try all the means that we have for the money not to go back to National Treasury and then redirect it to where it is needed at the most. So I think I touched on all those things, but definitely we will share the action plan with the portfolio committee. Mr. Bemo will take care of that one. Yeah. Through you, Chair. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We Chairperson want to confirm that there were performance bonuses paid to staff members, but not everyone got a performance bonus. We want to confirm, Chairperson, that not everyone got a bonus, a performance bonus. It was only paid out to about 73% of the staff members. The total amount the total amount paid, Chairperson, in performance bonuses was 4.9 million, which was within the 1.5% of the compensation of employees.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will respond to 2 questions. One is in terms of the regulations on the PP bill that has just been assent into law. I want to report to the Portfolio Committee that we have already started with the regulations together, working together with the EAAB, and we are anticipating that our regulations should be ready within this quarter in order to make sure that the regulations do not delay behind. The second question is in terms of the scholarship program. The Portfolio Committee, they want to know what process is being followed. At a high level, I can indicate that the scholarship program is earmarked at closing the skills gap at a provincial level. So we first have to look at what skills are required at the provincial level, and we do it together with the province itself. We do not run it on our own. And also it is done in that way because the very same skills gap that is being addressed, it must also go back to the very same province to assist them with the skills gap. So in terms of the process, we can provide the process as to how does it work, but we do it in consultation with the province. Thank you.
In conclusion, perhaps on the scholarship, we must also confirm we do advertise People apply, there's a selection with the province. That has worked very well since inception. We have supported just shy of 700-800 learners who've been through university. Of those, we have 50, my apology, of those, all the learners have found employment, whether within public service or otherwise. The common problem, we agree with the municipality, with the province, the learner goes to school. When they are done, the province or municipality turns around and says, oops, yeah, we don't have that position in the structure, and the story goes on. But Chair, we are left with about 45 that are looking for employment, and we assist with their placement. Chair, perhaps let me answer the question directly. A member asked, are we improving? Are we moving forward?
Chairperson, I can confirm.
Before you pass that one, you should actually talk about the ratio then.
Yeah. The ratio?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chairperson, allow me to pull up the figures, but you will be happy. No, these figures are the awards from last year. But when you look at the basket, that's where I want to go, because each year you make these awards, this year it looks skewed, I can see that. But remember, we award these every year. Those that were in the system last year, we must still pay. So allow me to look at that and present a more complete picture, Chairperson. Chair, I want to confirm, this train, human settlements, it is on track. The track, however, and the terrain is not level. There are challenges that we have to confront. There are difficulties in our environment that are not of our doing. The weaknesses that are within our department, we are sufficiently guided and held accountable through oversight bodies. I'm comfortable that where we need to make corrections internally, we are. However, this train, Chairperson, is moving forward. And we thank you, Chairperson, for entertaining us.
Thank you very much, Acting DG and your team. We'll continue to engage your action plan as we meet with you, whether all those issues have been addressed as raised by the AG. And we want to thank you again for the presentation and answering of the questions. We are now going to invite one of your entities. We have to take the 8 entities of the department. Today we are going to take 3, but fortunately they were audited as one, so it's going to make our work easier for the 3 entities which has been audited as one. So they will present as one entity. You would remember that when they tabled, because it's important to explain this process, that they merge within the financial in the financial year around September, and when we pass the budget, they've submitted their APPs as individual entities. But now they've been merged and been audited as one entity, which is what is called. Should I use the new name or old one? Yeah. NHFC. Yeah.
can we welcome you, Chair, and the CEO and the CFO.
NHFC, National Housing Finance Corporation, about to be Human Settlement Development Bank. So we're moving that way. As National Housing Finance Corporation, which is NHFC. As one entity, we'll talk to its chair as we present.
Chairperson, let me confirm the three entities are amalgamated in one. The Rural Housing Loan Fund and Nature were incorporated into the NHFC. As we sit here, we have one entity, one board, one audit report. The CEO and the team will present that report. Chairperson, perhaps to avoid confusion, the AG had to look at the entities as they were back and show their progression over time in terms of audit outcomes. I think that's what may be an issue, but be that as it may, the CEO and the team are here to talk to the annual report of the entity. Chairperson, permit me to clarify to the committee. The Development Bank is unfolding over three phases. The, if you like, it's really two phases, but the first phase was the amalgamation of the three entities into one. But the strategic decision was to use the base, the institutional base of the NHFC as the springboard towards the bank. However, the bank can only exist in terms of an enabling legislation which will come to the House once it's ready. At the moment, we're using the basket called NHFC to move us towards the bank. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. CEO.
Let me firstly thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the Portfolio Committee members. I know this is a process, and therefore